I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London, but not blue skies over much of Europe's big teams as Bayern lose, Paris Saint-Germain lose. Yeah, ooh, yeah, exactly. Real Madrid lose, yeah. Barcelona lose.
Yeah.
But we're going to kick off starting with a draw because Liverpool and Manchester City, it finishes 2-2. I thought this was one of the best games that I've seen this season in terms of quality, in terms of moments. To help us unpack it, who better than Nedim Onuwa, who's entirely impartial in this one.
Always.
Nedim, before we get into the game, this was just a spectacle. This was really, really special.
Yeah, 100%. I think when you look at the quality of the two sides and the sort of history they've had over the past few years, it's always a big game because it always seems to be something on the line within that game itself. And for the two varied styles of play, so as you put them together, you never know who's going to be favorite for the game at any particular time. But you do know that there's a huge attacking threat there. And there are always goals. Like, looking back, I was seeing some highlights from recent games, and I thought this has been a really, really good fixture. And in some ways, it feels like this is the Premier League's big fixture now. Even though you have the history of United, Liverpool, and so on, for the last few years, it's not really meant that much. But this right now feels like everything for the Premier League.
Now, I thought the game was so aesthetically brilliant that even though he made a big deal of it during the game, after the game, Pep Guardiola didn't even go two-footed on the fact that James Milner stayed on the pitch. Yeah. And I think we have nothing but nice things to say about James Milner, modern pro, older.
Yep.
He's asked to replace, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's young enough to be his son. And it's completely different. And he was beaten many, many times, and he resorted to the kind of that last one where Bernardo Silva literally lands on his head. I mean, he should have been sent off several times, and that might have had a completely different outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no debate. We can move on from this, right? There's no debate.
Yeah.
James Milner should have been sent off, and we might have had a different outcome. But moving on from that, I really like the fact that they didn't dwell on it. Pep didn't dwell on it after the game, neither did Klopp. They both recognized it, and they both kind of almost stared in amazement at what we just seen.
Although it was interesting, I think, to hear Pep and Nedim, you played at Anfield, and you played the game, the stadium was a bit different at the time, and maybe Liverpool were not as strong as they are now.
Yeah.
But if this game is played during the pandemic, he gets sent off because there's no fans there. Do you really believe that the fans kept him on the pitch, i.e. the referee? I don't know if scared is the right word.
Or was it the old stupid thing English referees used to say? Well, you don't want to spoil the game by sending somebody off. No, I want to spoil the game if somebody's doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, if he's deserved.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. But then to not attack Liverpool, I think that's just a thing that happens with significant home teams in the Premier League anyway.
So not like City.
If it was reversed, I think it would have gone the other way. But yeah, you could see it was a yellow card. And I think for a referee, like, they say that they've not changed the way the referee based on now with fans in the stadium when there was nobody in there. But when you're thinking about a decision and you could have 40, 50,000 people telling you it's the other one, like, that's it. That has to affect you. So just stop lying and just be honest about it.
So we were talking about this before, right? So City have played in rapid succession Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain, and now Liverpool.
All away
from home. They come away with 4 points. Arguably, I mean, no disrespect. I mean, you weren't here on Thursday, but City could have won the Paris Saint-Germain game.
And yesterday.
I thought they dominated the first half yesterday, could have scored several goals, could have won yesterday easily. Yeah. Do you view the glass as half full or half empty, Nedim?
So for me, I would say half full. And the reason I say that is because as far as football goes, you know, I think at times we can be really bogged down in results. But there are certain times when you can gain momentum regardless of the result itself, because there have been games which you lose. But if you walk off having played well, you feel like there's something to take to the next game. If they would have gone to PSG, gone to Liverpool and been completely outplayed, then there's a significant inquisition that needs to go on going forward. But when you sort of had moments where you've been significantly better, and I say moments, where you've been significantly better than teams who are supposed to be like the pinnacle as such, like, why would you not gain some level of confidence, especially given the fact it's away from home? And when we talk about Anfield, City have no significant record there. Nothing whatsoever.
I love that you say that, and I completely agree with you. And I think it's a reminder of the cultural differences that exist in football. Because in Italy, what we say when a team plays badly and wins, said, oh, look, they know how to suffer. They showed that they can take the blows. And I'm thinking to myself, but fortunately, attitudes are changing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of claptrap is this? But you're saying you as a footballer, when you go out there, if you play badly and win, you don't say, oh, wow, we really knew how to suffer there until Sean Goder pulled one out.
No.
You don't do that.
Never,
you know.
Never.
You're deflated never. Like, when that happens.
Like a result is a result. That's a good thing. You get the 3 points. That's great. But you know that as far as top level football goes, you won't be able to continue playing like that and expect to get results, because some of those occasions are more so like the exception as opposed to the rule. And I think sometimes we can, from the outside, be like, oh, you know, we did really well there. We defended really well, this, that, and the other, kept a clean sheet. Like, there's a lot of luck involved with that. And I think you'd much rather be a team that can control the game as opposed to one that gets lucky in it, because your luck at some point will disappear. And then when reality sets in, you go on a bad run, you've not got the performance either. So, yeah, for me, it's just a no-brainer.
All right, Jules is cross with me because we're 6 minutes and 11 seconds in, and we haven't mentioned... Jules is all about the technique.
No, it's just...
We haven't mentioned... I mean, there was a bunch of fantastic technical achievements.
Yeah, and performances.
Two that stand out, obviously, Mohamed Salah's second goal and that Bernardo Silva run where he seemed to beat like six people all around him.
Yeah.
I was never the most gifted player technically, so I will let you handle this.
I just think that when we celebrate a game like this, and we've said this, it was certainly the best game of the season so far in the Premier League, one of the best in the whole of Europe this season, it's also because you see those moments. Mo Salah's goal is one of the greatest ever scored in the Premier League, because it's in the game against City, because it's the game is in the balance, and because it's an amazing individual effort where the way he controls the ball, the way he dribbled past three of the City players, then Laporte, and sends Laporte, as Ibra would say, by the hot dogs, and then scores on his wrong foot. And for him, in his case, it's really, really the wrong foot.
I want to make a point about that, because we followed Mo Salah going back to Basel.
Yeah.
And the knock on him is the guy is completely unplayable when he gets on a run, but he's also completely one-footed.
Completely. It's not Cazorla or...
That's the pass, though. To have the confidence in that moment.
Incredible.
To do it with that foot. I thought he was going to pull it back again. I thought Laporta knows exactly what he's doing. He's like, I'm playing him onto the other foot. I mean,
In a way, Nathan, Laporte defends the right way. But in such a tight angle, for him to still finish with his wrong foot is just, wow.
Yes, it's an incredible finish with his weaker foot. Like, it's not high percentage. I think for Laporte, given the fact that he's not touch tight to Salah already, like, you're just going to, at this point, you're going to do everything you can, but then still just hope for the best. And I think to overcover on Salah's left foot, I think it makes sense. And even though it ends up being on a highlight reel, like, what do you want him to do there? To go half-half? Like, oh, I don't know, maybe he won't shoot on his left. Like, it's Mo Salah in the box. You're going to be thinking to yourself, he's going to shoot on the left. But the chop and the shot, it reminds me of when Messi did it to Jerome Boateng. Because that was another one.
That's the ankle breaker.
Another one of those things. Yeah, it's just one of those things sometimes as a defender. Like, my advice to any youngster is just don't be a defender. Just go be an attacker.
It's just the pace. It's just the pace of it that he has. From the moment he controls that ball to the finish, it just goes so quick. It's unreal. And the ball stays stuck to his feet, to his foot.
Yeah.
And then for Bernardo Silva, I just think, and you know I'm a big Bernardo fan, and I think one of the best things that City did was actually not being able to sell him, because especially in the last, three or four games, he's been incredible. But that run in the first half where he's got literally six red shirts around him and the ball is again stuck to his left foot. They can't even get near him. And then he ends up giving that amazing ball through ball to Foden, who then forces Alisson to a great save. I think this is like Maradona-esque, Messi-esque, in the sense that he's there, short player, left-footed, and just perfect with the ball.
Yeah. Nathan, if you could talk about that, because the thing about Bernardo Silva is, obviously, he's got a great engine, he's very smart, he's very technically gifted. What struck me about that was he's got all these people around him trying to get the ball off him, including one Virgil van Dijk, who's not having the greatest of seasons thus far. And yet it seems to happen almost in slow motion. It seems to be he's not using his athleticism there.
Well, he's not quick.
It's all skill because he's not quick. I'm wondering about that. As a defender, if you know the guy's not going to get away from you, do you approach it differently? Or is this just all just Bernardo Silva genius and it's got nothing to do with it?
Well, thankfully, there aren't too many players like that. I think one that came before, which he seems to be replacing now, is David Silva as well. Because yeah, with yeah. these guys, like, you've got some dribblers and what they
I thought you
do.
Were going to mention Kinkladze, given that you're a City fan.
Well, it's yeah. a long time ago. It's a long time ago. So with these players, like, some players put their head down and will do a trick and just try and find half a yard. But then other players like Bernardo Silva and the like, who don't really have any key physical attributes, which is what makes this more frustrating, because what they do is they're very good at reading when you move. So yeah. if you think you're going to dive in or something, that's when they'll move. If you stand back, they'll come at you. And they manipulate the ball based on what you're doing, not purely what they want
to
do.
Nate, it's jiu-jitsu. It's a freaking martial art what he does.
Yes.
He sees
yes.
the opponent and he does a counter move. And that's remarkable.
You know, I really always remember, Nathan, just to highlight your point and then let you finish it.
Yeah, but we keep interrupting him.
No, it's just I remember when Lilian Thuram played for Barcelona. And
he used to do that stuff all the time.
No. I said to him, like, why is it why is Messi so genius, so special? And he said, you know what Messi does? Often you've got a forward who comes at you and the forward knows what skill he's going to use. So he knows he's going to do a step over to try to dribble past you. He said, with Messi is so good that he waits for you to make your move as a defender, and then he replies to your move by using the right skill to dribble past you. And I really felt that yesterday, Bernardo, especially on that run, it was exactly that. He had the ball in his feet and he was just waiting to see what Henderson was doing, to see what Robertson was doing, to see what Van Dijk was doing, what Matip was doing, what Fabinho was doing, to then him doing either a little chop or a little outside of his left foot or a little dummy with his shoulder or drop the shoulders or do this and do that. And I just think that if at that level, at that pace, you are able to do that, wait for the defender to do something and then you answer it by doing the right skill, I think it's just incredible.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And they're the worst players to play against, because for someone like Van Dijk, he's probably twice the size of Bernardo Silva, but you can't get close enough to him to be able to use that force to take the ball away from him. Like, they're so, so good. And when City played PSG, there was a point where Messi had the ball in the center circle and he was just standing on it and nobody was coming to it. And so I was doing some other TV work and someone was like, oh, just go and get to him. I said, no, that's the trap. That's the trap. You don't go there, because the moment you go there and you try and do something, he's gone. This is a story I've seen 1,000 times over. And some players have that skill, and thankfully it's not a lot of them. Because for me, I always preferred playing against those players who were coming at me and they wanted to do their trick, because chances are they're doing the same trick that I've seen many times before. But when somebody's coming at you and they're waiting for you to make a decision, like, this is why I say, like, when you play against these types of guys, you just can't dive in. Because the moment you do, like, you're gone. The game's there for them, and that's all they want from you.
You know what's absurd is we're here, we're talking about Bernardo Silva. As you pointed out, this was a guy who looked to be on his way out in the summer. I mean, very explicitly, very obviously. And even now, if you were to rank players individually in terms of their importance to the team, Bernardo Silva may have moved up a bunch of positions. But for me, at least, I would still have him behind De Bruyne. I would have him behind Foden. I'd have him behind Ruben Diaz. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to Zach Steffen. I'd probably have him behind Ederson. You could make an argument that he's behind Rodri.
Yeah.
This is what's so remarkable about this City team. It's the number of weapons without necessarily having anybody, I know I'm making a big statement now, other than maybe Ruben Diaz, maybe De Bruyne, who is legit in the top 5 or 10 in the world in their position. I mean, maybe you might have put Ederson in there, but dude, you know what I'm saying?
Like, but this is the collective strength that...
It really is the collective, which is...
It's incredible.
Which is weird. And, I mean, we've talked about this before, Nathan, but Liverpool, again, I mean, we're talking about when we see tremendous individual skill from Salah and whatever, but clearly Liverpool were about the collective as well. When Liverpool won their title by 1 million points... You know, you were saying, ooh, who's their player of the season? Well, Jordan Henderson? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've got Van Dijk, you've got Salah. It's hard. And I'm wondering if it's almost counterintuitive that in this era of the superstar, right, we keep talking about this name, our Messi, Cristiano, Haaland, Mbappe, actually the teams that do better are the ones where you can't really pluck one individual out of them. You could throw Bayern into that mix too.
Yeah,
because
I guess so.
Of course, Lewandowski's great, but, like, you know, and he can't be replaced because they're ever. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's, it's remarkable what they've built versus, say, I don't want to pick on Manchester United, but other teams that have spent money, or Real Madrid even, right?
PSG, where they are,
Paris Saint-Germain, you know, different approaches.
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously you need money to be able to bring in players of that sort of caliber, but you also need that as a strategy as well. I think it was not this week where Bonucci was saying that at Juve they just had an over-reliance on Cristiano, so they stopped essentially doing things the way they did in the past. And I think that's the danger when you have one megastar within your team, whereas, say, for the collective, you win together. Everybody plays well together. You know, someone might have a bad day in terms of one aspect, but it's not going to be over the other. If they're not attacking well, they'll be defending well, because they know that's how they're going to be successful. And then from there, when you're playing against it, when any single person on the field could be the key person, then you can't say go and double team this guy because you're leaving somebody else open. And it's great. I like it. I like what Liverpool are doing. I like what City have done and all that stuff. And it's great because as well, players we didn't even mention. Say, for as good as Bernardo Silva's doing now, how much of that is to do with the fact that Gundogan is injured and he's not playing? And also at the City now, Kevin De Bruyne, you say he's probably one of the top five in the world and whatever. He's not even playing that well.
No.
But they're still winning games and they're looking good, you know, because that's the collective. Whereas other teams, I think, would probably try and rely 100% on him to form some sort of magic. But that's not the way that City and other really good teams at this moment work. And I think that is what makes them great.
All right. I want to get to Liverpool in a minute, but just to complete the City debate, I do feel it's not going to be much of a debate because I feel like we are broadly on the same page.
Yeah, I think we do.
But I think Jack Grealish was the nominal center forward in this game.
Which is a bit surprising. It was a bit surprising, I thought, considering that against Chelsea and PSG, he was playing a different position. I don't know why you try him then for that game in that position where he's never played before. That's all.
That struck me as odd as well. Like, where the big reveal. None of us buy into the whole he needs a real number nine thing, right?
He definitely doesn't.
And if they do, I personally think he has one in Ferran Torres who can be that. But what do you make of that? The fact that, let me play Grealish in a position he's never played before. Because, foreshadowing, later in the show, I'm a hammer Koeman for playing Frankie de Jong as a right winger when he's never played that before. Mm. But I got to be fair here, right? If they lose this game, I would be questioning Pep's decision to play Jack Grealish center forward when he's never done that before. Does it not really matter because it's not really a center forward position?
No, I understand what you're trying to say, and I think it is valid. But if we go back a year, I think at some point last season, he started playing Phil Foden through the middle. And there was one game in particular. It might have been Chelsea, when they beat Chelsea away from home, almost a year ago.
Through the 3-0 last time for Bridge,
I think Foden was playing through the middle. Yeah. And he had a very poor first half. Then I think he got better in the second half. It was either Liverpool or Chelsea this game anyway. And throughout the season, he played a few games there, and he wasn't great, but he was getting better and better and better. To the point now where, say, if you put the team sheet up and Foden's through the middle, I understand what it's going to look like. And I think for Pep, he's trying to educate his front line to be able to play anywhere across those three positions. But to do that, you need to get the reps in there to do so. And for, say, Grealish right now, like, he's been brought in for the money he's been brought in for, whatever, but he's behind all those other strikers in terms of forwards, in terms of understanding those positions, because he's, like, they've spent a year doing it. So, like, as I say, to put him in.
So get in the reps and Anfield against Liverpool?
It's amazing that you give him an education in this game. Exactly. You still should win the game and play better. I think it's amazing.
But then that's what I'm saying. Like, I mentioned the Foden one. When he first did it, I think it was either Liverpool or Chelsea when he did it last season.
And then took him by surprise.
That's the nature of that. That's the nature of that manager. Because, you know, you could say pop it in an easier game or whatever, but I think he likes to see the players almost get thrown in at the deep end and see if they can swim. And if they can't swim this time, they'll get another chance to do so. But that game there, this whole week for Jack Grealish could be one of the most significant in his career, because he's going to realize that if he wants to be the top tier, like the players that are in the team at this moment, and to be playing at City and being successful, these are big weeks where you need big performances. And I think he'll react well off this, off the international break, and come back in better form, I think.
Yeah.
I kind of assume that he didn't play Foden through the middle because he saw a very obvious mismatch of Foden against Milner.
More the pace, definitely, than Grealish, for sure.
Yeah.
Just on the force number nine. And then I swear we would never talk about it ever again. Okay.
Sure,
but we all
will,
agree.
Yeah.
Why this is complete. This is a false debate and a complete lie of people saying, but look, Bernardo Silva is there, and if he was a real number nine, traditional number nine, he would be in the box and that would be a goal. Oh, look, Foden is there, but if it was a real number nine, he would be in the box and that would be a goal. Oh, look, a traditional number nine would do this and that would create another chance. This is a false debate because City play that way exactly because they don't have a traditional number nine. So what Bernardo Silva brings you, or Foden brings you, or Grealish brings you in that position, or De Bruyne brings you, is also because they play with no number nines. Put a number nine in there and City would play differently, create chances in a different way, and maybe you would have more fullbacks involved like they used to before when Aguero was at his best, and little overlaps and cutbacks and all of that, which they don't do so much now because they play with a false number nine. Everything that your false number nine brings you, by definition, a traditional number nine would not bring you. So what you gain with a false number nine, you would lose with a traditional number nine. But I can't even understand the debates of people saying, yeah, they should have signed a traditional number nine. They should have signed a striker because, look, they would do this and this. No, they wouldn't.
I'm just going to say two things to this. It bugs me so much. Liverpool have been the other outstanding team in the Premier League, right, for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
They're recognized center forward has either been Roberto Firmino, who's anything but, or Diogo Jota, who's a winger playing in the middle. If we really have to go and insist on labels. The other thing, yes, they pursued Harry Kane, but they pursued Harry Kane because he's a phenomenal footballer, not because he's a phenomenal center forward. I think that should be pretty obvious. If that had been the case, they would have gone and they would have brought a guy in there for as a plan B. And I think they might still do that. Maybe in January or whatever, but I think that's the benchmark that they're using.
Sorry, to just say something about this, if possible. So this Harry Kane saga that went on during the summer, there are two ways that I see it. And I think, firstly, if City really, really wanted him and felt their season hinged on getting him, they would have gotten him.
That's the first thing I think. I think Daniel Levy might... So you're saying they didn't really want... It's a bit like Cristiano Ronaldo. They want him, but only on their terms?
Yeah. But then the other side of that debate is with Harry Kane, people saw him in a Man City shirt and they thought City are going to be scoring 10,000 goals a season with Harry Kane in there. So when they didn't get him, the feeling is like when you see somebody on a game show who's potentially going to win the biggest prize and then they don't get it and they walk away and they feel like they've lost, but they haven't lost anything because they never had it. And to add to that, the team that they had at the start of this season was a team that just won the Premier League with a new addition. So why is it that some people perceive City to be in a worse position now because they didn't sign somebody who they never had? They've not lost Harry Kane, yet still the feeling is like they did. So like, how is this even a thing? And oh, they won't be able to do what they did last year. Why not? Literally, why not? What's changed in football that they won't be able to do that? When you look at, say, we're talking about false nines, forwards, all this stuff, City will have five players on the field who are all capable of scoring maybe 10 goals a season, probably more, five. How many other teams have that luxury when they start a game? Yeah. How many teams have that?
But it goes back. When Pep won his first title, if I'm not mistaken, the year Yaya Toure scored 20 goals, and they have four guys who scored 20 goals that season?
Yeah, something like that.
So I want to move it on to Liverpool because I thought this was really important for Klopp, the points, the confidence. I was really impressed by after a first half where you can turn one around.
First half.
You're at home, you get absolutely battered. You say bad first half. I'm not even sure Liverpool were bad as much as it was Liverpool City being really, really good.
Yeah, but the two go together.
They do, but it's sometimes the other team batters you because you're bad, and it's because did he do something different at the start of the second half, Nathan?
Did they do something different?
Yeah, or did it? Was it
higher
just
to start with? They were far too deep in that first half.
Was it just arousing? But were they deep, or did they choose to be deep?
No, you see, Klopp said two things. Klopp said he spoke about this after the game, and one of the things he said was that they made it too easy for City, and the back line was too passive. And because the back line was passive, it meant that was what the field sentiment was all throughout the field. So when City were moving the ball, Liverpool were playing into their strengths. And he said they needed to be more aggressive in terms of the way that they sort of would step out from the back and not encourage City to do what they want to do. And then obviously the fact that you're at home and you've done that in the first half, that'll play into it as well. But it was good because, as I say, Klopp was talking, he was talking tactics. He was talking about closing this space, closing that space, doing this, doing that. And that's good because he's showing that he's a manager who can be reactive to what's going on the field, because something needed to be changed, something needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And I think he did that. And he also said, as far as keeping the ball, he said they played some long balls, but only maybe two or three of them were the right long balls. He said to the team, you need to take longer on the ball and look for a pass before you start going wherever. And that in some ways just shows that, you know, you might have been getting pressed by City, but then also it's still a big game. It's the occasion. They were doing things which they don't normally do. And he basically told them to calm down and look for the right things, which they've done consistently throughout the last few years, and get back to who they were. So that was the change. And then before you know it, as soon as the team, like the way, I think the way football works, which maybe goes a bit understated, as soon as one team takes a forward step, it's very hard for the other team to do the same. So the ebb and flow of a game kind of goes like that. So City, for example, they didn't play as well in the second half as they did the first, but a lot of that's to do with Liverpool playing better than they did in the first. Two teams can't just really be going end to end like that for 45 minutes because it's football, it's not basketball. You know what I mean?
And you saw him, you could read on his lips during the first half when he was really unhappy. He kept saying to them, be brave, be brave. And I think Nedham is right. At halftime, he must have said to them, listen, you know, you have to play more from the back than we did, because City's press, as we saw against Chelsea, and Chelsea could not deal with it, was good in that first half, and City were by far the better side. And I think in the second half, and as we saw on the first goal, I don't think Fabinho plays the ball he plays to Salah on the first goal before Salah goes onto the run and then the pass for Mane in the first half. I think in the first half, he's under pressure, he plays that long. Instead, he plays that to Salah's feet, and then it's Salah 1v1 with Cancelo. He goes the little dink over his leg and then goes. The ball to Mane is perfect, and the Mane's run is perfect too. But I really don't think that goal happens in the first half. It's because Klopp said to them, be more brave, you know, be braver, use the ball better. And I think they did that. And then the second goal, as we said, you can't, you know, this is a goal from somewhere else.
I think, though, if you're Liverpool, you come out of this feeling good about yourself, and not just because, like we said, the result and the fact that there was the Rodri block on Fabinho at the end, which could have given you 3 points. You know you're outplayed by maybe the best team in the world. You know that you came back, you got back into it, you came close to winning. You know that you did it without Alexander-Arnold. And I would also add, without Thiago Alcantara, because I think this was a game which really would have been made for him. And having him in the middle of the pitch, we might have seen a different game. Or maybe wouldn't have taken that level of heroics from Salah.
I mean, you saw when Trent is not there, how different the attack.
It's completely different. Ugly coda to the game, and then I want to ask you about your celebrity friend. There were reports that there was the Manchester City, in fact, I just got it now, that they're going to report that they were spat at.
Their staff, you know, that really close to the first rows of Liverpool fans at Anfield, you sit really close to them, and that apparently, they were spat on by fans.
Okay. Nedham, times you've been on the bench and stuff, how often does this happen? Does it happen more often than we realize, or
not very often? Like, the spitting is obviously disgusting, but there's certain levels of abuse which happen at certain places more than others. And with this Liverpool thing, like, obviously the clubs are rivals, but then there's the whole Liverpool Manchester sort of hatred anyway. So that thing that manifests itself every time there's this sort of game, like, a lot of people I know over Liverpool way don't want to see Mancunians heading over there, and vice versa. So this game has that little bit extra. And then when you're seeing it's City, you're seeing it's Pep, all that stuff, like, it's that whole sort of sense of tribalism within football. And some people will do stuff like that because they literally, like, they love their team, but they hate the opposition, like, they hate them with a passion, the same way you could hate the most hated person on planet Earth. That's who Pep is. That's who Man City are to them. And sometimes when you do travel around the country, you do get that. Like, some people don't like you, but then there's certain rivals. So whether it's to do with geography, history in terms of football, but yeah, that it has, that type of thing does happen. And
this isn't going to happen, to be honest. I mean, this will result in some kind of fine or something. It's not going to have any kind of knock-on effect. It's not really anything to go in. Like, I don't want to minimize it, but I'm saying...
No, but what I think is... this is disgusting anyway, but in England especially, you saw in some stadiums so lucky for the fans to be so close to the pitch and to the bench. Why are you going to ruin it like that by insulting or spitting on people when you know, you're such in a strong position to watch a game? You can watch Guardiola and Klopp.
No, so that's why, that's the thing, that's what you forget. That's why some people get those seats, is so they can be that close to the bench, so they can give abuse out to the people who come and try and play Anfield. That's the ironic thing about it. Some people go there for a great view, other people go, because it's a great point. So just go and just reach out and just hammer whoever they want to hammer.
Nadim, you have a podcast of your own, and you
recently, yes,
amazing podcast.
You recently had a chat with Noel Gallagher. Is it fair to say, is he the most famous City fan in the world?
Yeah, surely.
He mentioned somebody else, but I think I'm pretty sure it's him.
I was just curious in your conversation with him. He talked about his music. You didn't just talk about football. I'm wondering. Okay, I'm going to try to say this in the nicest way possible. No, if you're a footballer, a retired footballer in your case, I wonder if there's a parallel between that and being a musician, where you kind of, I don't want to say you didn't necessarily peak, but in some ways, you have the peak of your success in your 20s, maybe early 30s. It often happens. And then afterwards, and especially with musicians who record a phenomenal album and write phenomenal music like he did, does he feel like he's spending the rest of his life trying to live up to that? Or is he just not bothered?
No, he's fit. So when I spoke with him, he was like incredibly mature and incredibly chilled out. And he's not bothered about trying to be as good as he was, because he's very confident in who he is right now. And obviously they had huge success when they were in Oasis, but now he's got his own band, which has been going on for 10 years. And the thing that he really enjoys at the minute, he said he'll just get his guitar and he'll just start jamming along to something. He's just creating so many things. And I suppose that's the difference between, say, football and music and so on. Like, music could be however you want it to be. You could see it however you want to see. You're creating your own sound. You're doing your own thing as and when you please. Whereas with football, like, you know, I could go and get a ball now and start doing some keep-ups or something, but it's not going to give me the same joy as somebody who's making sounds.
Well, also, you know, because your body deteriorates, right? You might be smarter than you are when you were playing professionally. You might be as good technically, but physically, there's a decline.
With Noel as well, he said that obviously for Oasis, that's where lots of the their big success came, but he's better now than he was then. And that's another big parallel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally, because he's like, he never confesses to be the best guitarist, doesn't confess to be the best singer, but he was singing that, whereas back then he was just, you know, he was reciting lyrics, essentially. So that level of creativity can come with time. This is a man in his 50s, but if you come to me in my 50s and say, right, you need to go and try and defend against somebody, I'd be like, no, thank you, I'll just stay indoors. That's the way it's going
to
be.
I'm disappointed you didn't mention to him how good singer you are, as we saw on the show, and listeners know already.
I went bigger than that, though, because I used to play, I still kind of play bass guitar. So I told him that I was actually jamming to some of his songs at the lockdown at the start of the year with my kids and the amplifier and all that stuff. So instead of, you know, talking about the singing thing, I talked about something I can actually do. And he was like, oh, that's really cool. In a very, like, you know, he's trying to be nice kind of way.
Be polite.
He's, like, he's Noel Gallagher, but still, it's a nice moment.
He wasn't like, hey, send me some tracks, man. Like,
yeah, I can produce
you. Can you imagine how many times he said that? Yeah, I'm really, really good bassist. If you ever need a bassist, please, I'll look after you.
Nadim, it's been a pleasure and a privilege. Thanks so much. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough City, enough Liverpool. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
From bad to worse for Ronald Koeman and Barcelona, as perhaps, not surprisingly, they fall to Atletico Madrid, 2-0. Jules?
So I've taken a decision, Gab. I will not say this man's name ever again. So I will call him the Barcelona coach or manager or the Dutch guy or whatever.
Jordi Cruyff's friend on the phone.
I've had enough. I really have had enough. I mean, yeah, you're right. This is not a surprise. They lose to an Atletico side who have not been playing well, but are better than them. They still have a lot of players missing. But my word, some of the decision that the Dutch guy has made for this game, like playing De Jong as a... I'm not even sure what kind of position that was.
It was right the winger, Andy Carrasco position.
And then it was dreadful.
What was funny was he puts him out there, presumably off the ball, making runs, whatever. But then that's where Carrasco, Lemar, and João Félix all operate from.
Yeah, and that's where the threat comes from. Exactly. It was so stupid. Everything was stupid. Yeah, they had a lot of the ball, could not do anything with it. Atleti were a lot back to the old Atleti, and that worked. And Lemar was brilliant. One of those days where Lemar... And you, it reminds you how good he can be. But I've lost all hope until that guy is sacked and they bring anyone. I don't care. Anyone would do better than that.
So
I promise you.
Barcelona, very quick to point out, yes, it's international break, but no, he's not going anywhere. Sid told us that it's because they can't afford
to sack him.
But they're also certainly not support him because, you know, it was just last week when I think it was one of the vice presidents came out and described the ideal Barcelona president, and it was like a photo negative of
manager,
Ronald Koeman.
Benfica was bad already in midweek.
Can we give him some positives to the Kool Aid? No. Coutinho started, created a chance, and then of course the genius takes him off to put on Fati. No, nothing wrong putting on Fati.
No.
Ansu Fati getting fitter.
Yeah. 20 minutes. He got this time with 25 minutes. Yeah, it's better than the 10 he got the other day, but.
Araujo, when he doesn't play next to Mingueza, is okay.
Oh, he's the best defender.
Right, there you go. Mile.
I'm not sure that counts as positive, Graham.
Is Memphis finding his kryptonite now?
The poor guy. I feel for him as well. Luis Suarez didn't celebrate his goal against Barcelona, the second one, though he obviously had something to get off his chest with that telephone gesture.
Yeah, later he was kind of denying just reminding friends it's all the same number. Yeah, no, like, for those who missed it, this is clearly a reference to what to that phone call with Ronald Koeman. I can still say his name.
Yeah, the Dutch guy.
Koeman, in less than 2 minutes, told them, oh, yeah, you're no longer wanted here. I kind of want to give Koeman a pass for this one because it was obviously not his decision. It was a disastrous
financial
situation.
But there's still a way to do it, yeah.
Whatever. There is a better way to do it. Although, frankly, if you had to go in and give Suarez the bad news, he's a bit intimidating. For all you know, he's going to jump on you and bite you.
But it's not even your fault, so it's easy.
If I was Koeman, I would say, listen, I'll talk to him, but let me go with the director of football, whoever it was at the time, Abidal or whoever, let's sit down. And at least it's 2-1.
And Barca was the only team Suarez in La Liga that he hadn't scored against. So that must have also been like, hey.
And which is why he didn't celebrate the way he usually does. Paris Saint-Germain, meanwhile, lose at Rennes 2-0 despite the big three up front. Jules, is this a big deal?
So I was at my sister's wedding, as you know, so I didn't see anything. I'm glad I didn't. I'm kidding. I had to watch it late last night. And there were 20 good minutes. 20 good minutes where Messi hit the bar.
Did Neymar already leave for international break and he left some like...
His brother, or his cousin, I think it was. He was already thinking about, going back to Brazil, you know, what I'm going to do, seeing the family, his sister, all of that. Because Neymar didn't turn up. Apart from that 20 minutes where I thought Messi was good, hit the bar, Mbappe had that chance, that big one-on-one, but no shot on target in the end. And they conceded just before the break, just after the break. Rennes had nothing special but solid. And we said PSG had been on a thin edge in the league before, and this time they paid for it. It was not good enough.
8 wins out of 8 before this. Yeah, 6-point lead.
With so many big teams losing this weekend, Gab, obviously Bayern didn't want to be left out. So here they go, at home, being beaten by Eintracht Frankfurt.
So many, many years ago, when I was a child, I used to live in Frankfurt. I do have a bit of a soft spot for Eintracht.
You do.
So I am delighted, and I'm delighted for Jan Åge Fjørtoft and whatever else.
And Kevin Trapp.
And Kevin Trapp was phenomenal this game. Not one of my favorites. But I do like Hinteregger and Filip Kostic. I think you might find that they're two special players. But, guys, you replay this game 50 times. I don't know how often Frankfurt wins. No. Neuer did have to make a couple of big saves. But Bayern outshot them, controlled the game, missed a bunch of chances.
Trapp stood on his head.
Not something, I think, to be concerned about. But well done, Eintracht.
Of course.
Napoli do it again, beating Fiorentina away 2-1. Jules, they are the only club in Europe's big five leagues to be perfect thus far. 7 wins from 7 to start the season against a tough Fiorentina side.
Who took the lead as well and gave them a good game in that first half, and then they came back and won. And I love the character. We mentioned that before. I'm getting worried about the African Cup of Nations at the start of next year, because you will lose Koulibaly, Osimhen, and Zombo Anguissa, who are arguably your three outstanding, most outstanding players this season so far. So Napoli and Spalletti, just get as many points as you can in the first half of the season, like Atletico Madrid did last year, 50 points in their first 19 games, and then you're going to slow down, because missing those three is going to be huge, and we will talk about them in the next quick hit too. And then you can manage the second half of the season. But that's when I watch them play, I'm saying, okay, what is this team going to be without those three? That's my only worry. But it's one for later. And sticking with Napoli and those three players, the Sorno is at the end of that game. Koulibaly, Osimhen, and Zombo Anguissa were racially abused as they walked off the pitch by the Fiorentina fans.
Yeah, and Koulibaly, I mean, the other two kind of like smiled and walked out. Koulibaly, like, credit to him.
Yeah, yeah. He's done it in the past, too.
He's done it in the past. I think this is how you need to react. Yeah. It seems to be like the trend has changed. Like, people don't get racially abused during games. It seems to be before and after. It seems to be individuals.
So, Juventus
who filmed themselves. By the way, Juventus said they're going to find him, identify him, name and shame him. We're still kind of waiting on that.
That's quiet, doesn't it?
Credit to Fiorentina. Joe Barone came out afterwards and said, this is absolutely a disgrace. We're going to find this guy, blah, blah, blah. Good for him. That is the right reaction. This is what I want to hear from clubs when it happens. Yeah. Not like, oh, it's only a minority, but no, this doesn't reflect our city. Enough crying. Nobody's saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's a minority, show that you can control your own stadium, especially if you know it's individuals, especially if you know there's video. Go get the guy and ban him. Hopefully Fiorentina will lead the way on this one.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Manchester United are held by Everton at Old Trafford 1-1. Cristiano Ronaldo came on, played the final 34 minutes, and looked grumpy at the end. Jules, there are many reasons to be critical of Solskjaer, starting with a goofy lineup with Pogba and Sancho on the bench.
Yeah.
But is his handling of Ronaldo one of them?
So in a way, I'd say no, because he's 36. I mean, he can't play every single game. He played the whole 90 minutes and more because he scored the winner against Villarreal in the Champions League in midweek. But the issue I have is with Ronaldo's face, because what's the deal if Ronaldo is not happy to miss this kind of games before an international break, where he can say, listen, I'm going to rest. It's not if we were playing again on Tuesday or Wednesday. So it looks like Ronaldo was not happy to be on the bench, not happy to come on late for the last 35 minutes.
Not happy with the result at the end.
Yeah,
it been the main
but maybe
reason
he's
why
not
he's
happy
angry
with that kind of deal of you're not going to play, especially again in a game like this where he can have played, he could have played 70, 80 minutes, they're 2-0 up, then he comes off and then he rests for the next 10 days because it's a national break. And they're not even in the Champions League semifinals.
I love your scenario where Ronaldo starts and it's magically 2-0.
Well, no, but they're better with him than without
Rafa
him.
Benitez.
For
no,
sure.
Of course. I agree with you. I've just been struck, and I touched upon this before. I think Solskjaer, everybody liked him as a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, moaning about referees here, moaning about Klopp there and the penalties. Now, after this game, he's like, well, I know why I didn't start, and he knows why I didn't start, and you don't understand why, blah, blah, blah. I mean, just leave it. I mean, honestly, there's a great...
You acting more humble.
Absolutely. One of my favorite, all-time favorite sitcoms is an old sitcom called The Larry Sanders Show. And there's this one where Hank, who's the goofy kind of sidekick, he gets Larry's unavailable, so he guest hosts the show. And he's humble, and he's nice, and everybody likes him. Then the next one, he starts behaving in a very unpleasant way, and suddenly nobody likes him.
Yeah.
Solskjaer's treading a thin line.
Yeah, yeah, you're
right. He's much better when he's likable, Ole, than when he goes and starts picking fights. Yeah. Just remember, you're not Mourinho. It doesn't work for you.
Real Madrid 4-2 Espanyol 2-1, and Carlo Ancelotti says it was their worst performance of the season. Gab, this comes just a few days after the defeat against Sheriff in the Champions League.
Yeah, people are going to tie the two things together. Big difference against Sheriff. They played really, they played well. They should have scored 4, 5, 6 goals.
Right, they could have.
They could have easily done so. Here, they were really, really poor. Now, we also have to give credit to Espanyol. Sergi Darder in the middle of the park was fantastic. Our man, RDT.
RDT, of course.
Did you see what he did to Nacho?
Yeah.
Man. Equally, Carlo reshuffling. He's always reshuffling things.
I know.
We saw Alaba move to left back. We saw Casemiro drop, which I think
Lucas
is a good thing.
And we said,
Lucas Vazquez right back.
Never again, we said.
Kroos and Modric together in the middle of the park. Benzema did score a great goal, but I thought this was a fully deserved defeat for Real Madrid. Arsenal are held to a scoreless draw away to Brighton. Jules, even Arteta said this wasn't on a par with their previous performances. Is that more because Brighton are actually really, really good and more of a team?
Yeah, Brighton are good. They've got 14 points in 7 games. They're 2 points behind the leaders in the Premier League. They're good. They're good collective strength. We talked about collective strength earlier with City. They're good collectively. And Arsenal, this is a game they would have lost last season and the season before. Just the fact that they kept clean sheet, 0-0, away from home. It's good for them because it's a positive result, nevertheless, even if they didn't play well. And
if Emile Smith-Rowe sees Bukayo Saka at the end, then they win this game.
Milan get a huge win over Atalanta to stay second in Serie A on Sunday night. It was a fantastic game, I thought. Gab Pioli said that his young players are not playing like youngsters. And what does he mean by that? And by the way, I thought Maignan was, again, fantastic.
Maignan was really, really good. Kept them in it. Yeah. Milan, though, also creating a ton of chances at the other end. I think what Pioli means is that these guys are mature. They take their licks. They pick their spots. Mm-hmm. Rafael Leao, I thought, was really good again. Theo Hernandez going forward. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Tonali being a Brescia guy means so much for him to score against Atalanta. Atalanta, look, Maignan did make some big saves. Yeah, you see the 3-2 result. You also have to remember those two goals came at the very end and were kind of distinctly against the run of play, I thought, by that stage in the game. But they're right up there. They're competing legit for the title, 2 points back. Still no Erling Haaland, who was in the stands wearing the whitest hoodie you'll ever see. But Borussia Dortmund beat Augsburg 2-1. Jules, are you impressed?
No, not at all. Still not. I mean, they scored early. The first goal, Rafael Guerrero. And then after that, I'm just always left a bit like, okay, what more can you show me? We talked about this many times. I'm not, but they won. It was important, especially because Bayern lost. So
Augsburg are a really bad side. And also, memo to Marco. When Haaland's not there, there isn't like an off-brand Haaland that you can replace him with. If you have to stick Malin up front, you have to play different.
Yeah, and exactly.
They didn't do that.
A late Manuel Locatelli goal gives Juventus 3 points in the Turin derby. Their fourth win in a row in all competitions, Gab. Is Allegri starting to get it right? Are we seeing the Juve now?
I thought they played better against Torino. But again, it kind of plays into their hands. Torino, under Juric, playing very progressive, very attacking football. That makes Juve comfortable. Now, in their defense, there's no Morata, there's no
Dybala.
There's no Paulo Dybala. And it's big that Locatelli wins, and he's very much becoming a leader. And it's great, Locatelli, Chiesa. But still, they're not imposing themselves on games. And right now, that may not matter, but that is where Allegri wants to get to. Spurs endure protests against owner Joe Louis before the game, but end up beating Aston Villa 2-1 as Hongmin Son steals a show. Jules, this was a major potential banana skin. Can we show Nuno some love?
It was, because as we saw, Villa against United played well away from home the weekend before. I thought when they came back to 1-1 in the second half, I thought Villa were going to come and win that one and nick that one. But Spurs reacted well, I thought, after that equaliser from Watkins and finished the game well. And it's just, I don't think it was perfect, far from it, but it was such a big win in what they needed, especially after the Arsenal humiliation a week ago. So
we know what happens.
Good on
breaks.
Them. Exactly. The Athletic reports that when Tottenham appointed Nuno in the summer and gave him a 2-year contract, it was actually really a 1-year contract, the second year being triggered only if they finished top six. The club denies it. If it's true, though, Gab, it's pretty clever from Daniel Levy.
It's very clever. The Athletic standing by their reporting on this one. I have no reason to doubt them. It is. And I'd like to see more clubs doing this.
I agree with you.
So that we don't see clubs trapped by enormous contracts. Yeah. Bayer Leverkusen destroy Arminia Bielefeld 4-0. Oh, wait. Did you like how I went all Derek Ray there?
No,
to join Bayern at the top of the Bundesliga table. As you know, Jules, I don't believe in goal difference, which is why they're level. Have we been sleeping on them a little bit? Are they better than we think?
I think so. I think Gerardo Seoane, the manager who did a really good job in Switzerland before and replaced Peter Bosch, of course, is doing a great job. I mean, Florian Wirtz is fantastic. Moussa Diaby, Paris born and bred, but he's the best winger in the Bundesliga. Right now, here you go, I've said it. And even Patrick Schick is scoring.
Did you say he's the best winger in the Bundesliga?
That's exactly what I said.
Do I have to send Serge Gnabry around your house?
Please do. I think Moussa Diaby right now is certainly more consistent than Serge Gnabry. And talking about consistency, even Patrick Schick is consistent. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? So I think they're good. I don't think they're still good enough to beat Bayern over the whole length of the season. And also, you know, they play in the Europa League, which I think is more tiring than playing the Champions League and all of that. But they've been great to watch, certainly. I think they beat Celtic 4-0 at midweek. They win again 4-0 this weekend. It's pretty solid. Thomas Tuchel makes a bunch of changes, and Chelsea eventually beat 10-man Southampton 3-1. Gab, what did you learn, if anything?
So, well, first of all, I thought it was interesting because we talked about people resting players before international breaks. Obviously, it was necessary. I kind of think, but you wonder about why would you rest people, as you pointed out when we were talking about Cristiano earlier, before they're going away. I think he just wanted to assess what he had. And of the guys who came in, we're talking Hudson-Odoi, we're talking Chalobah, we're talking Ben Chilwell, the forgotten man, and of course, Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I thought Hudson-Odoi played really well. Yeah. I thought Loftus-Cheek played really well. Of those guys, I think Hudson-Odoi might have the biggest long-term upside still. But man, Loftus-Cheek is different from the other midfielders.
Exactly.
If he can get some consistency, and I feel for him because he's the guy, he's got, I'm not going to draw a parallel with Pogba other than height, but those guys where they're tall, if you're tall and you're a central midfielder and you're technically gifted, if you don't always perform at the best, it's not because you didn't perform, it's because you're lazy. He's had the tag of lazy, just like Pogba's had the tag
of lazy.
Yeah,
exactly, you're right.
Because these guys stand out. Yeah. It's as simple as that. If he can stay fit, I think he can be a valuable weapon. I'd still be a little bit concerned that Southampton, who basically sold everybody who wasn't nailed down in the last couple of years, you know, they can still give you a game, still in the game until James Ward-Prowse gets sent off. That, for me, should be a little bit more of a concern.
You know what? I wonder if Tuchel regrets not playing Loftus-Cheek against Juventus, because when he came on against City, he played really well. And then I think a lot of us expected him to be given a chance against Juventus, and yet you didn't count on him, and then played him there, and he showed what he could do. So it's interesting how you deal with players.
They have to stay fit, but I think over the course of the season, especially since Saul still hasn't shown us anything, I think you're going to need Loftus-Cheek. Maybe you might even need Ross Barkley as well, who did a couple good things when he came on too.
Yeah.
Watford sack Cisco, and according to reports, will appoint Claudio Ranieri to replace him.
Yeah.
Jules, how excited are you?
We all love Claudio. We don't know anyone who doesn't like him, maybe apart from Raymond Domenech. But apart from that, I mean, he's good. Sampdoria, he did a decent job. We can call it decent. Not amazing, but not bad either. Again, this can't be long term, so I'm not sure why you go for him, but we know.
You say it's not long term because it's Claudio, or because it's Watford, or both?
Yeah, I think a bit of everything, but we know, you know, how the Pozzo family manages their club, so we'll have to see. But I'm glad he's back, because I think he's always great value for the Premier League.
And the number of managers in the Premier League who have won the Premier League has just increased by 50% from 2 to 3.
Exactly. Inter get battered for an hour or so, but eventually beat Sassuolo 2-1 after Inzaghi makes 4 changes in one go. Gab, this was a bit fortunate for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, as you know, when people make a bunch of changes, turn the game around, like, oh, how smart was he to change? To me, it looked to me like, uh-oh, we're kind of screwed here. Let me just change everybody and see what happened. Sassuolo were phenomenal. Jeremy Boga, Maxim Lopez, these guys.
Berardi,
They had this new guy, Alessio Dionisi, who's their manager. I thought, okay, you're filling the Zabbi. Those are some big shoes to fill, right?
Big shoes.
Oh, man, they play so well. They keep the ball. They attack you. They press you at different times. You know, he plays this game. He leaves Raspadori and Scamacca on the bench, two of his best strikers. And still, they dominate. Inter very, very lucky. Handanovic make a huge save. Handanovic should have been, in my opinion, sent off for bringing down Grégoire Defrel outside the box. But then Dzeko comes on, scores a goal, wins a penalty, bish, bash, bosh, it's 3 points. If you're Inter, you're still concerned. And you're realizing, I think, Çalhanoğlu does not fit this team at all.
But you know how last season we said about La Liga and the lack of new young managers coming with their idea, that the bunch of managers was not really evolving. I love that in Italy, this is exactly happening. And if De Zerbi left, it's still brilliant to see those new guys.
Italiano, if you're in team, is the other
exactly.
obvious one.
And they're playing good football and great, and they bring those new ideas, and then that has an influence on the other managers in the league who are maybe more experienced and more mature to also evolve, which you don't have in Spain. And I think that's the reason why Serie A is going up when La Liga is going down.
Do you think 2030 World Cup final, Italy versus Germany France? In the final.
France?
No, it's got to be Italy France? Versus Germany. No, okay. I want to see Germany managed. So I want to see Italy managed by Domenico Tedesco and Germany managed by Vincenzo Italiano, and everybody's heads
exploding.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
I know you love your Super Classico and your Marcelo Gallardo. So, Jules, you must be delighted that River beat Boca 2-1.
And... because, you know, Julian are all
Julian
great.
Alvarez,
And Julian Alvarez with 2 goals, of course. The new, I mean, he's 21, so he can't be like a wonder kid anymore. But
really failed the trial at Real Madrid a few
prodigy.
Years ago.
No, he's not going to fail anywhere. This one has great destiny ahead of him. 2 goals, the first one especially magnificent. Well done, Julian. No relation, of course, but still good.
Gallardo, I got to ask you, since Gallardo has a Liga pedigree, he is the one... outside of Europe, right, where we're very navel-gazing on Europe, right? We always say the best manager in the world outside of Europe, okay, it's Chiche.
It.
And then after that, we always bring up Gallardo or Gallardo, right? I know European clubs have definitely looked at him.
Yeah. I think...
why does he...
I think he's this January.
I'm telling you, this January.
I think with River, he finishes
United,
up to December. I would love him at United. I would love him in France. I would love him at Barcelona. I would love him
to replace Pochettino, maybe.
You know, behave. But I think he's got a great future ahead of him. And the next step is in Europe. And I can see why he wants to finish this season, because I think River can achieve great things this season. And then it would be time for him to go.
I've had people tell me that he doesn't necessarily have the appetite to come to Europe. He doesn't necessarily, he says he's happy where he is.
Yeah, no,
in a
maybe.
Comfort zone.
I do think there's some offers that you can't refuse.
Barcelona?
I would love that to happen. He'll probably be upset that we're leaving him so late in the show, of course. But Gab, how about showing some love for Jose Mourinho and Roma? They beat Empoli 2-0 and are fourth in the table. They play Napoli the weekend after, when we're back from international break. And Pellegrini signed a new deal until 2026 too.
Absolutely huge. Pellegrini, of course, Roma, born, bred and buttered. Yeah. So important. I know, it's just a
weird
thing.
So you continue all the captains, Totti, De Rossi, Florenzi, Pellegrini, all Roman born and bred. I love that.
I'm not from Rome, so I don't understand those people. They're a different culture to mine. But it really matters to them.
It really matters to them. It does.
And it's great news, because also Pellegrini, phenomenal footballer. Tammy Abraham, he's hit the woodwork 6 times already this season.
6 times.
Pretty amazing, huh? A win over Empoli, as you'd expect. No aftershocks from the Derby defeat.
Yeah.
And I think Mourinho, I think top four is a legitimate target for Mourinho this season.
Yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Bit of breathing room for Jesse Marsh. It's Leipzig beat Bochum 3-0, and Christopher Nkunku bags another 2 goals. Jules, he now has 9 goals this season. Everybody's so excited about that Adeyemi guy in Salzburg.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's doing it in a better league without all those penalties.
I know.
Now, That said, I find it absolutely wild and crazy that he has as many caps for France as I do.
No. Listen, Didier, if you're listening to this show, and I know you do, please explain to us why Guendouzi is in your squad, why Adrien Rabiot is in the squad, even why
Tony Marshall.
And why Christophe Nkunku has still not been capped by France. I don't get it. I don't know if Deschamps doesn't watch much of Leipzig games, maybe. I don't know if he doesn't know exactly what his best position is, because it's a...
Do you think he remembers him as a defensive midfielder at Paris Saint-Germain?
I don't know.
He says, well, I have Conte, I don't need this guy.
But I don't know.
He doesn't play that position anymore.
Deschamps is so dogmatic in a way of players need to have one position, and they say, and we don't really evolve, and there's not much... fancy tactically, and then Nkunku is the opposite to that, because he can play everywhere, he's so good, he needs a bit of freedom. Maybe that's the reason. I really thought this was going to be the international break where he would call them up.
Well, I don't know what to think of this guy. He keeps calling the wrong Hernandez brother, right? I don't know if he gets them muddled.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't
now
even look
finally
the same.
They're both in there, so that's good. We're happy.
So he can realize who the good one is and who
maybe.
The bad one is.
Or maybe he's just thinking, okay, this is the Nations League, it's semi-final, it's a big game with Belgium, then potentially the final against either Spain or Italy. Yeah.
So that's why I need to have Guendouzi there in case it breaks down into a
that's
fight.
To make the numbers, but maybe next month, when we go back to the meaningless World Cup qualifiers, then maybe Nkunku will have his chance. Let's hope. You know, that's all we have. Let's hope. Real Sociedad took on Getafe last night on Sunday, thinking they might go top of La Liga table, given their opponents had lost 7 in a row. That's Getafe, yes. And Gabi finished 1-1. And once again, we hear saying, oh, Real Sociedad missed out on an opportunity to win a game and go top of La Liga.
You talk about sleeping on somebody. Oyarzabal, of course, scored and came up big again. I thought Real Sociedad deserved to win this game. And I'm sorry for Getafe. I have a weak spot for the manager. But they deserve this. I think they're tired. They're running on fumes. But still, they create more chances than the opposition. I hope it wasn't stage right. I'm just loving this La Liga because, you know, you've got Sevilla up there as well.
Yeah.
This, the way things are going, this could be one of the tightest leagues in Europe, or
the
tightest league
be.
In Europe. So I look forward to seeing them play again. And they've got injured players to come back as well, which I think is always very big.
Always big.
Serge Aurier is being closely linked to Villarreal after having his contract with Spurs rescinded. Good move for him. And by the way, can we now tell the story of what happened at Tottenham?
I just think... I don't think Nuno counted on him at all.
But it's very rare to have a club cancel somebody's contract and the player agree, right?
I think they tried to sell him, but once they could not sell him before the end of the transfer window. He had 1 year left on his contract. They were not going to play him. They made that clear to him. He wanted to go somewhere where he would play. He's not the kind of guy to stay for a year just to take his money not playing, which I think he deserves credit for that. So it was a deal that suited him too. And now Unai Emery knows him, of course, had him in Paris. And I think Villarreal could be good where you're more attacking-minding than defending, and Villarreal could do with a right-back too, so it makes a lot of sense.
You know, he was offered to Arsenal too.
He was offered to the whole world, I think.
How cool would it have been if he joined Arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been cool. Ugly story from the NWSL in the US, Gab. Lisa Baird, the league's commissioner, has resigned after he emerged at complaints from players who felt they were harassed and sexually coerced by their coach Paul Riley at the time were unheeded. So basically the league closed their eyes and Lisa Baird did so.
She was one of several commissioners in this period. Paul Riley, he's English. He's been working in the US for a long, long time. The early stories, he denies all the charges. What I find most disturbing here, and obviously the players will hopefully there'll be a full investigation. He said he denies most of the charges, whatever that means. Obviously, this is terrible. This is a workplace environment. What I'm not clear on is so they reported this to the NWSL, and things were slowed down, covered up, and whatever else. And I realize they do things a bit differently in the States. But if this were to happen in a European league, you don't just report it to the league or to your club, you report it to your association.
Yeah.
So the U.S. Soccer Federation, which I believe also at the time was also, if not a part owner of the NWSL, also helping to run it, I'd love to know, did they report it to them too? Because they're the ones who should be in charge of the disciplinary side. The league just runs the league.
Of course,
and they should be with something this serious. I don't know. I just hope the truth comes out. I don't think women's football needs scandals like this. If it brings out better practices, then hopefully it'll lead to something better in the end, because nobody should have to put up with this. And big shout out as well to Alex Morgan. She not only came out and she used her pedestal as somebody who is famous and said, no, look, they say this wasn't reported. Well, here are the emails and stuff, you know, putting out screenshots of
screenshots,
it. It's very important, I think, that she take a stand as well. And kudos to her and Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, what is it with nobody wanting to go top in La Liga? Sevilla could have also moved into first place and with a game in hand, no less, with a victory over winless Granada. Instead, they contrived to lose.
They managed to lose. They missed some big chances, to be fair to them. They also lost their centre-back, Diego Carlos, who got sent off right at the end of the game. You could sense the frustration from Sevilla, I think, because they knew this is a game, this is a great opportunity for them to go top and to put a stamp, in a way, to put a stamp. They were not good in midweek against Wolfsburg. They should never have got that penalty at the end to draw 1-1. I thought it was a bit better with the ball this time, but again, missing chances and seeing the frustration growing, is, in a way, it makes it even more exciting, as you said, because La Liga is even more tight at the top and it's even more interesting. But that was a big one, I think. Big one missed by Sevilla.
Yeah, they'll look back. And by the way, I think they'll end up having another, I think their game after the break also postponed.
And Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid's games too.
So a bunch of postponed games.
That's going to be a nightmare, Gab, to reschedule everything.
These are all Champions League teams.
Yeah. Lazio lose to Bologna 3-0. Francesco Acerbi gets sent off and then does something really stupid on his way out. And then he redeems himself. Gab, what happened exactly?
So Francesco Acerbi is a real class act and a gentleman on the pitch and off it. He plays center back, he gets sent off, he gets wound up. But he always comes clean and he always apologizes after. What happened here, he gets sent off, and as he goes off the pitch, it looked like he was giving people the finger.
Yeah.
Now, initially claimed that I think his finger was trod on or whatever, and he was showing them the finger. And then afterwards, he says, even if it's true, he says, this is nonsense. He came out and he said, I apologize to my fans for getting sent off. I apologize to the opposition fans for that gesture. This is how grown-ups behave. Yeah, exactly. You apologize in real time through your social media channels. You do it in front of a microphone. You do it in public. You certainly have enough of a platform. So well done, Acerbi. I have no issue with you whatsoever.
Me neither.
Jules, this was first reported last week, and magically, it comes true, because it's funny how same people seem to have access to this information at a time. But FIFA and the British government reach a deal whereby players traveling to what are considered red list countries, countries which the United Kingdom considers at risk in terms of the pandemic, even though, weirdly, they often have lower infection rates in the UK, but that's another issue. These are mostly in South America and Africa. They won't have to quarantine in a hotel for 10 days when they return, provided they're fully vaccinated. Obviously, last time, a bunch of Brazilian players, some Argentine players, to go. Yeah. This is common sense.
Well done.
Right?
Finally.
There in the end, yeah?
In the end. Since July, we've been banging on about, hey, don't forget, there might be a problem coming September, coming October, coming November. And in September, they didn't do anything. They did nothing to prevent that mess. It was a mess that ended up in that Brazil-Argentina madness. Fiasco. That's the right word. Now, finally, they grabbed that chance to make it right. And it was not that hard, was it?
No, it wasn't that hard. It's amazing.
It's amazing. UEFA and CONMEBOL announced that they will play a game between the champions of Europe and of South America next June. So Argentina against Italy, maybe.
And then it's going to be a game to honor, apparently, the rumor is it's going to honor Diego Maradona.
Yes.
And will be played at Diego Maradona Stadium in Naples.
Which would be lovely. Not just that, though, Gab. They will also open a joint commercial office in London. And opening offices outside of Switzerland is clearly very popular, as, according to the New York Times, FIFA are thinking about opening one in New York. Your thoughts?
I think these are all complicated machinations to do with the tensions between FIFA and UEFA, the biennial World Cup, all this stuff. I think these organizations want to make themselves more commercial, so obviously you make sense. You go to London, you go to New York.
Yeah.
I think in the case of FIFA, there's another element to this, from what I've been told. The appeal of opening an office in the U.S. isn't just to be closer to sponsors and whatever with a view towards 2026.
Yeah.
It's also, if you go there, you're under U.S. jurisdiction. And they know that they have a tarnished image because of everything that happened before 2016 and the corruption, whatever. And they say, I also know that in Switzerland, you know, this is a place where people were hiding gold. Let's not ask too many questions, number the counts. But if we do this in New York, you know, we're going to have the local DA scrutinizing everything, and we're going to have more credibility
for the
as a result. Okay, so I think that's a part of it as well. But the row over the Biennial World Cup rumbles on. I think you'll see more developments in the coming days. Hmm. Former Marseille owner Bernard Tapie has passed away, age 78. Jules, in good or bad, he marked an era of French football.
That's right, Gab. One of the greatest characters that we've ever seen in French football. Maybe the greatest. And I think in football in general, for the good and the bad, the good, of course, is the what he did with Marseille. And he was the president and owner there between 86 and 94. They won league titles. They won the Champions League, of course. That was tarnished by the fact that he was found guilty of bribing games and buying players. The Valenciennes one. There's rumors about others, of course. But he was something very special, and he still inspired generations and people in Marseille. He was also a minister as in government. He was an actor, a writer. He had a thousand lives. And he lived life to the full. And yes, he had flaws and not everything was perfect. Far from it with Bernard Tapie. But he was an incredible guy. Cycling, he had success. There's a lot of things that he did and touched that he had success. But he also collapsed from his pedestal and all of that. It was just incredible. And everybody's sad, especially in Marseille, of course, where there would be a chapel at the Vélodrome Stadium, all sorts of mourning and ceremonies and all of that. And I think, although he was Paris born and bred, but he will forever be Mr. Marseille, and football in Marseille will always be associated to Bernard Tapie.
Do you not view him as a loser and a sellout and a traitor that he's Paris born and bred, and rather
that's
than
too strong.
Buying Paris Saint-Germain and making them great?
I try to don't think about it. Okay. Thank you. Iñaki Williams sets a new La Liga record by appearing in his 203rd consecutive game for Athletic Bilbao, while Fabio Cagliarella scores for Sampdoria in their 3-3 draw, making it 17 top flight season with at least one goal. And I think in midweek, Benzema and Messi also scored for their 17th consecutive Champions League season. Loads of record. Which one is the most impressive?
I love the fact that we managed to mention Quagliarella in the same breath as Benzema and Messi. It's Iñaki Williams. Because if you see him play, this is not a goalkeeper.
No.
If you see him play, he runs, he goes at a million miles an hour, full on out. I don't understand what he's made of. He's like the bionic man. 203 consecutive games is just incredible. I mean, what is that? That's more than five seasons
in a row without missing a single game.
I mean, that is just simply unreal.
And also, he always looks like he's 21. But you know he's not, he's 28 now or something, or 29. But he always looks so young. So
he
it's
never
even
ages.
More surprising. Yeah.
Right, that brings us to an end. But we're going to be back on Thursday because it's the Nations League.
The Nations League.
More silverware. Ooh, who's in the semifinals? I think Italy in one, France in the other.
Yes.
Should be good. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.